Oh yeah, it's just after 4:30.
It's the power of love.
Means it's time for smart speakers. Yeah, you're in love. Mark Mendelsohn's
joining
us.
Speaking of love.
All right, we're joined by two of Toronto's best and brightest to dive into the biggest stories of the day.
Listen to The Rush with Rashmi Nair and Scott MacArthur.
This is Smart Speakers
on News Talk 1010.
Toronto.
All right. Smart Speakers coming up. And today we have Mark Mendelsohn, News Talk 1010 crime specialist, former Toronto police homicide detective, and sometimes pal of mine. Lindsay Broadhead, Senior Vice President, Communications, Public Affairs, also a former homicide detective. I made that part up. Sorry, you're actually the Vice President of Communications, Public Affairs at Toronto Region Board of Trade. But I personally think, Lindsay, you'd be a really good cop. I think you're tough, but fair. And I think you know how to handle yourself. You know what I mean? Like, have you ever thought about that? You ever go into law enforcement?
I would not stand up well in a physical fight.
Have you seen Mendelsohn?
But if there was
the bar is low.
Stealth, crime investigation work, creeping behind bushes and trees and stuff. I think that would be fun. I'd excel.
This is how I imagine being a cop too. Mark, do you creep around bushes?
Just say yes.
No, I really don't. But I'd take Lindsay any day over that little guy Reed. So have no fear.
I feel the love.
The three of us would be quite the crime stopping machine.
We could be known as can't and won't. Yeah, but it'd be fine. It'd be good.
Can't and won't. Okay, let me get this out of the way because we talked about indoor air quality and Scott Reed was very skeptical about the entire discussion. But Lindsay Broadhead is part of the Toronto Board of Trade. And I was really selling to Scott, Lindsay, that you would maybe want to weigh in on it. If only because the mayor weighed in on this survey or this testing of air quality in businesses across Toronto. And he said that the results are promising, at least in encouraging the economy to bounce back. I mean, how much does it matter if there is a consortium testing out how often air is circulated in businesses when you're trying to draw people outside of Toronto back into the city?
Look, we did some work on this at the earlier period in the pandemic, and it was definitely something that was of consideration back in the time when we were trying to figure out how to get people back into the office. I saw the research coming from Maru, and you know, it, according to him, the air quality is a feature. My two cents is that people are already of a certain mind, and I'm not sure if it's the air quality specifically that is the deciding factor, right? People are going, frankly, to bars, restaurants, concerts. They're in very tight spaces if they're inclined that way. And that culture is happening and hopping. And then there are people who are still hesitant and reluctant. So I'm happy to hear that the air quality in our offices, the downtown core, is good. That's a good news story. It's certainly better than what the opposite results could be. Is it going to draw people back into the offices? Not alone. I don't think so.
Mark, I happen to know that you spend time in bars and you are back in the office. So we can't personalize it. We know that you're not freaked out about air quality, but do you think that air quality is like, and people saying, well, I don't want to go back in the office because I'm anxious about, you know, the quality of the air. I'm anxious about RSV, about COVID, about all that. How big a factor do you think that is? Is that more or less important than I'd rather just telecommute from home? Where do you rank it?
It's not a consideration of mine at all. I'm more concerned about a guy standing beside me who's coughing up a lung as I'm talking to him. That troubles me more. I'm concerned that although our numbers are apparently very good, according to the interviews that you guys did this afternoon, I'm not going to judge whether I'm going into a place or not going into a place because of, you know, they scored a 7 or they scored a 4. I'm not going to not go into Bob's bar because he scored 8. Having said that, look, I was on an airplane yesterday for an hour and a half. I didn't give air quality a thought. What I'm concerned about is that if this turns into sort of like a dine safe kind of situation where you can actually look up these locations and see what the air quality is and make your determination whether you want to go in or not, I don't think that's you know, that's forefront in everybody's mind right now. You know, people have to take their own precautions. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask, decide where you want to go. You know, and the number itself at this point in my life is really irrelevant.
All right, let's move on to the green belt then. Do you guys think Doug Ford lied in 2018 when he said he wouldn't touch the green belt, and now there's at least some consultations on developing on the green belt? Lindsay?
Thank you for the softball question. I don't know is the question. I mean, the stories are, you know, they read a certain way in terms of the timing. But at the end of the day, he's consistent with his desire to develop. You know, at the board, we're absolutely pushing the housing agenda. But we also are very pro Greenbelt. So, you know, from the board's point of view, we think it's possible to reach the numbers of housing units that we need by using other lands. I can't comment as to whether the land he's chosen is truly not required within the Greenbelt or not. I for one believe that the contiguous nature of that space is really important, flowing of animals, you know, and all the rest. So we'll see. This is going to be one of those ones where we have to, you know, look around the corners and make sure that we've done the proper investigation. And I think it's, you know, he should be willing to do the same as any government should if they've done nothing wrong.
All right, Mark, you heard Lindsay dance around there like Mikhail Baryshnikov. What about you? Do you not find it a little sus that Ford said he would never develop the Greenbelt, then he does, in fact, move on 15 parcels of land? There are registered lobbyists for the people that won those parcels of land, and a bunch of them seem to have been major donors to Ford campaigns, either in terms of leadership or the Conservative Party. You smell anything there, former police detective?
Yeah. You know, there's an air quality test that's required here as well. And, you know, it just makes me wonder, you know.
Mark, that was good.
Thank you.
See, that was really good.
I'm a smart speaker guy.
Right here.
You're showing signs, yes. Mendelsohn. We'll keep you around.
I'll tell you, you know, it was the oxygen in the plane yesterday. It's affected my brain. But yeah, you got to wonder when a parcel of land is worth, say, for number's sake, $80 million, and now it's worth double that, you know, because it happens to sit on the green belt. You got to wonder whether there's some inside information that's being flown back and forth here. But having said that, I think we're all delusional if we think that these pieces of property and land are going to be developed for affordable housing. Because I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think we're going to find big lots, big homes, and the affordable housing and the multi-unit dwellings that we need are not going to be built on these you know, parcels of land. And you know, John Woodward's a good reporter with CTV. He's getting started on this. I think he's going to be digging in a big way. And, you know, whether they're contributors or not is not going to mean that much to me at the end of the day. It's what do these people intend to build on these particular properties? Are we going to end up with box stores and multi-million dollar homes, or are we going to end up with affordable housing, which, you know, we all agree is necessary and required right now?
Yeah, I love that the consults were announced on a Friday afternoon. Oh, we're just going to look at developing this land now on the Greenbelt, and we all did a double take. And then when it was brought up in question period, there was talk about immigration was the reason. And to Mark's point, I asked on the radio, are immigrants going to live in these developed lands in the Greenbelt? I highly doubt we are going to develop for those immigrants.
Man.
That's my final thought on that.
But it's not the final word from our smart speakers. They'll be with us again on the other side of traffic and news. So stick around. Scott Reed in for Scott MacArthur. Resh Me Nair in for Resh Me Nair. Mark Mendelsohn in for, I don't know, a talented police officer. And Lindsay Broadhead in for herself because she's tremendous. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rush Toronto. It's almost 5 o'clock. Making your way home on a Friday night. I hope that's an easy drive. We're here. Scott Reed sitting in for Scott MacArthur. Resh Me Nair on The Rush. And we've got smart speakers. That means Mark Mendelson. That means Lindsay Broadhead. Mark, as a former police officer, I want to ask you, police shot two men in Markham. These are in light of a string of home invasions that had occurred, quite violent and quite pronounced, these home invasions. At least one man dead. The SIU are investigating. The SIU, just to clarify again, and you can walk us through this, but the SIU are obligated to investigate any time a police officer shoots or kills someone in the or fires their weapon in the line of duty. So just walk us through what we should expect there. And can you speculate at all? I know that's irresponsible. Can you speculate at all, though, about what might have gone down here? Why would people who are involved in home invasions end up being shot? They must have had weapons or something? What would have gone on?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the details of the actual interaction that they had, but any time the police are involved with an interaction with an individual and there is death or serious bodily harm, then the SIU invoke their mandate. And what that means is essentially that the home police service, so in other words, the police force or service that those officers work for, step away, and the SIU, the independent body from the province, takes over the investigation in every shape or form, and then they get first opportunity for every witness. They designate officers that are subject officers or witness officers, and there's different responsibilities on those officers. A subject officer does not have to speak to the SIU. They have the same rights as any other citizen in this country. Witness officers have to provide a statement to the SIU. And then once they've conducted their investigation and their forensic investigation, then they will eventually, and as we've seen historically, a couple of years from now, they'll come up with a report as to whether the police acted properly or not. So their fine definition of when they can invoke their mandate is pretty clear. And in this case, it's happened. Now the police service itself has to put the cone of silence on. They can't comment. They can't offer any information to the media, to the general public, until such time as it comes out of the mouths of the SIU.
Is there work as redacted as the document submitted by the Prime Minister's office in the testimony at the Emergencies Act inquiry? See that segue there? I tried really hard.
Smooth.
Let's talk about the Emergencies Act inquiry. The testimony from the Prime Minister, Lindsay, there are some clips that are clippable, quotable quotes here, but did anything stand out to you? How'd you anticipate Justin Trudeau's testimony?
I thought I didn't watch the whole thing today, but certainly caught bits of it. And he seemed to deliver really tight, succinct stories, but in kind of clear, everyday language. I thought he was, again, really consistent in the decisions that he made. All of his emails that were read out or correspondence that were read out, again, seemed highly reasonable. It just seems like there's this consistent story that's being told, which was, we had to go forward with this thing because those who had the powers simply didn't use them in the way that they should have. So we needed to. And I feel like that's a really reasonable narrative for the everyday Canadian. There's just nothing for me that I've learned from any part of this inquiry that, frankly, I didn't witness on TV as the convoy was happening.
Mark, there's been a lot of critics, though, that have said, well, the government has refused to permit cabinet confidences to be revealed. They refused to reveal what the precise advice from the Attorney General was that said, okay, here's legally why we're justified in invoking the Emergencies Act. Does any of that trouble you? Do you smell a rat? Or are you, like Lindsay, saying, look, this thing had gone on for 3.5 weeks. For Pete's sake, somebody had to do something.
No, I mean, they're going to claim solicitor-client privilege, and that's, that is a right that is unbreakable, quite frankly. What we've learned from all this, and Lindsay's right, much of this we knew. We knew that the Ottawa Police Service screwed this up. Beginning, I think that's been fair comment, and I've been consistent with it. We know that the sort of analysis and the weight given to intelligence information that was coming in was scattered and chopped and you know, not actually absorbed and digested in the way that it should have been. And then we had an opportunity to see the convoy people come in. And, you know, I give credit to Justice Rulo. He gave these people all the rope they needed to sort of show the country just exactly what they were and what their state of mind was. And we've learned from that, I think, in terms of Bill Blair, Marco Mendicino, Chrystia Freeland, and the Prime Minister. As Lindsay said, they've been very tight and very concise in what they have testified to. You know, for me, the worst part of this entire hearing in terms of the convoy people is their counsel. I mean, what this guy has done over the course of these last 3 weeks, what he has said and how he has acted and running through the halls, chasing ghost witnesses around, would never, ever, ever get through a judge in a superior court, certainly in this province. And if he is a representation of who he is representing, then I think most of the public will look at that and go, yeah, I get it. So the big decision will be, were the laws that were in place at the time, the criminal code, the Highway Traffic Act, provincial bylaws, municipal bylaws, were they sufficient to deal with all of the trauma and all of the situations that were going on in Ottawa and elsewhere in the province? Were they sufficient, or did they really need that act at the end of the day to sort of get them over the hump to take care of this? That's Justice Rouleau's decision at the end of the day. I don't know where he's going to land on that. I think it's a pretty fine line. But I think at the end of the day, the government has come out with put their best case forward in this. And I think that the convoy people have actually taken a couple of steps back.
Nah, they're planning a reunion, a 2.0, Mark. They posted something on Facebook when Chrystia Freeland was testifying yesterday. So I don't know, like, just overall on this Friday evening, I thought it would be monumentous. I thought it would be momentous is the word I was trying to look for. I thought it would be
momentous.
It would feel historic. I don't know. Did today feel historical? It doesn't really feel like we peaked in this inquiry.
There was just no gotcha moment, right? Like, I think people were waiting for this Nixon moment where it's like he has to admit something that's hidden in the corner. And there's just none of that has been revealed. You know, our prime minister is being cross-examined, and all he's really fundamentally saying is, I did what's right for Canadians. You know, I think it's if this was a strategic move, or, you know, to your point, if the convoy protesters were trying to make this part of a bigger story connected to February, connected to another moment, I think it's been a huge, just a sleeper. Nothing's going to happen.
Oh, we appreciate you both. Lindsay Broadhead, Senior Vice President, Communications and Public Affairs with the Toronto Region Board of Trade, and Mark Mendelson, News Talk 1010's crime specialist, former Toronto Police homicide detective, Scott Reed's best friend.
That's not true.
It's our Smart Speaker series.
It's really not true.
It's The Rush, News Talk 1010 Toronto.